Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Onal et al. Titled, Calcium Calmodulin Kinase 2 Dependent Regulation of Atrial Myocyte Late Sodium Current, Calcium Cycling, and Excitability, a Mathematical Modeling Study. This article was published online August 25th, 2017. Joining me today are consulting editor Igor Efimov, lead author Thomas Hund, and content expert Patrick Boyle. Let's get started.
So the atrial fibrillation remains one of the major targets of cardiovascular research because currently in the United States alone, we have probably close to 16 million patients by year 2050. And worldwide, currently, I believe it's close to 40 million patients, and it will increase dramatically in the next few decades. So currently, the therapeutic approaches available to clinicians are very limited. Unfortunately, drugs have very low efficacy, perhaps as low as 15% only. Plus, even patients who can be treated with drugs suffer from severe side effects. And essentially, currently, the more efficient therapies are limited to ablation. Unfortunately, we still struggle with understanding how atrial fibrillation is induced, how it evolves from early stages to later stages to persistent stage. But what we all agree, perhaps, is that initial stage of atrial fibrillation is perpetuated or started by abnormal focal activity, mostly in pulmonary veins, but also in some other regions of atria, which are otherwise more or less healthy. And as atrial fibrillation progresses to more established persistent stages, perhaps there is also a shift in mechanistic understanding or mechanistic perpetuation, such as from focal activity goes to more rotor-driven activity. But initial stage, how focal activity starts, is still very poorly understood. So this paper from Tom Hunt from Ohio State University brings up very interesting and perhaps one of the first points that in the complexity of early stages of focal activity, there's a very interesting and delicate interplay between late sodium current and chem kinase. So a special model was constructed by his group, and this model really brought up very interesting mechanism which was overlooked previously in experimental studies. So Tom, could you please describe what are the major findings of this study?
Thank you, Igor. The model that we used here that I was actually developed by a graduate student in the lab to try and tackle some of the mechanisms for triggers of atrial arrhythmias. There are a lot of data available at the cell level and increasingly at the tissue level about what happens to atrial cells that might increase the likelihood for abnormal action potential generation. But really, we lack a coherent model right now for incorporating all these different pieces of data to try and actually piece together the string of events that leads to ultimately to an arrhythmia. Specifically, in the case of atrial fibrillation, we know that there are prominent defects in signaling pathways in these cells. And what we chose to focus on was a pathway regulated by calcium calmodulin dependent protein kinase 2, or CAM kinase 2. And why this signaling pathway is interesting to us is because now we have data from animal models and even from human patients with AF that CAM kinase signaling is dramatically altered in the disease. Recently, our group has become interested in how CAM kinase regulates another target in the cell, which is the voltage-gated sodium channel. And we have data from mouse models that we were able to use to be able to create a model of the atrial cell that for the first time included this CAM kinase pathway. So basically, we reached a point, I think, where enough data were available that we could begin to try and incorporate this pathway into the model. And what's exciting about that is that now you can start to look at how the cell responds dynamically to different stimuli and begin to trace this kind of web of events that starts with some kind of acute insult and ultimately results in an arrhythmia.
Thank you, Tom. This is very nice. And I would like to switch to our expert, Patrick Boyle, and to talk about the field of computer modeling from somewhat of 40,000 feet outlook. Even in this paper, One of the limitations admitted by the authors is really lack of adrenergic system. So currently it is modeled just through essentially adjusting conductivities of various currents and pumps. But in order to understand atrial fibrillation in this case, as well as many other diseases of the heart, we really need to understand in great detail beta adrenergic system. We also need to understand cholinergic system, because atrial fibrillation in particular is very strongly cholinergically dependent. So can you talk about what is the current state of this signaling field? What are the achievements, and what are really big underserved areas of computer modeling community where we have to provide experimental data in order to build robust and accurate models?
Sure, Igor. Thanks for the question. I think that, yeah, generally speaking, we work at the organ scale and at the tissue scale, where we integrate cell scale computational models like the one described in the paper that we're discussing today, alongside tissue scale representations of the propagation of electrophysiological wavefronts. The dramatic majority of research that's published, even in the field of computational modeling of AF, uses cell scale computational models, like you said, that ignore or dramatically simplify the adrenergic and cholinergic systems. I think what we're headed towards is convergence, as the availability of models like the one published in Tom's paper here becomes more widespread. I think that there's going to be an impetus for us to begin exploring at the organ scale what are the consequences of these elegantly modeled cell scale phenomena. There's a growing body of research that suggests some provocative questions. Like, for example, does pulmonary vein isolation necessarily work because it's isolating a region of triggers, or because there's collateral damage to the ganglionated plexi that are coincidentally located near the pulmonary veins? Do interconnections between those ganglionated plexi play a role in promoting the perpetuation of triggered activity during early stages of paroxysmal AF? And so I think what I'm interested in knowing from the perspective of, you know, convergence is, how straightforward do you think it would be, Tom, to integrate a model of this mathematical complexity in an organ scale model or a tissue scale model of the atria, where you might have, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of copies of this individual cell scale model, in order to try and tease out the links between the subcellular and cellular phenomena that you've studied here and how those might manifest in triggered activity at the organ scale?
Yeah, that's a great question, Patrick. And I think, as you know, fortunately, computers get faster all the time. And so, you know, I think it's more realistic now to think about incorporating these more sophisticated models that have, you know, oftentimes dozens of differential equations that need to be solved for each individual element in your model. It's maybe not an issue if you're trying to simulate a single cell or, you know, a strand of cells. But when you get into trying to study the tissue, it becomes a much bigger problem. I think, you know, for that reason, you know, we like to develop these detailed models, but I think it's also important to take a step back and do some analysis, which we try to do in this paper towards the end, and really get a grasp on what are the important factors in the model that determine behavior. And so, you know, by doing some analysis, you can actually, you know, look at all the parameters in your model and figure out, okay, which ones are important for the phenomenon of interest, and which maybe can we represent at a coarser scale. And so I think to be able to merge these cell models that have signaling elements and the kinds of three-dimensional models that your group routinely works with, we're going to have to be elegant about our approach. You know, I think the work that we did here addresses kind of an acute level of adaptability, meaning, you know, these signaling pathways get turned on by calcium or oxidative stress or something, and then they go on to change the activities of ion channels. You know, the next frontier really is, we know that not only do these signaling pathways change the activities of ion channels, but they also change things at the level of the gene program. And so I think a big question for us going forward is, how can we represent that next level of adaptability that's going to be really important to kind of fully wrap our arms around atrial fibrillation?
Indeed. So when we look at an intracellular signaling, such as acute signaling related to adrenergic or cholinergic system or chem kinase system, but ultimately all of that, including ion channels and those cellular signaling systems, are all regulated by master switches, which are transcriptional systems. You've identified a number of parameters which are critically important for type of behavior which leads to focal activity. And now the question will be, what are the master regulators, the transcription factors, perhaps developmental transcription factors, which when are dysregulated and affecting tens of different targets, what are those targets which play a role in the genesis of arrhythmias? And combined with what Patrick mentioned, namely complexity at the anatomical scale, so now we essentially facing an insurmountable challenge. How do we identify it from the myriad of parameters affected by those master regulators, those which are important in the genesis of atrial fibrillation? And then how do we map those parameters in a highly heterogeneous system such as atria, where action potentials in different compartments are exceptionally different? Plus, this is all superimposed with exceptionally heterogeneous innervation of both adrenergic and cholinergic nerves. So how do you see the next step, Tom? How would you map essentially myocytes functionally as well as molecularly in the atria, let's say, of human from normal state to the pathological stage in the different stages of atrial fibrillation? And how would you see the future in the next 5-10 years when we can finally map that at the whole organ level?
I think these are really exciting points that you raise. And just you know, hearing you talk about all these transcriptional changes really gets me excited. I'd like to quote the movie Jaws and just say, I think we're going to need a bigger computer. I mean, that's sort of the brute force kind of approach. But you know, again, we can't just expect to layer on levels of complexity and think we're you know, we're going to be able to come up with an answer. I mean, the advantage of a model is that it's a reduction of the real system, right? So if the model is just as complicated as the biological system, it doesn't really do you much good. So we really, you know, as we go forward, I think it's important to incorporate the biological detail as we learn more about these transcription pathways, for example, and the master regulators that are involved. But, you know, we also have to take a step back and be creative about how we move forward from a modeling perspective. You know, when I think about the next steps, I'm encouraged by the work of Ken Campbell at University of Kentucky and others who are actually working on developing finite element models of the myocardium that can grow in response to a biomechanical load. So, you know, it kind of sounds like science fiction, but I think we are getting there where we can, in an efficient manner, account for processes like cell growth and other, you know, kind of tissue level changes that are going to be really important to understand and to hopefully come up with better therapies for human AF patients.
And if I could jump in there, I think that it's an elegant point to jump off and talk about why it matters so much that we have these mechanistic understandings at the cell and tissue scale in order to fuel the next generation of, you know, research in image-based models. The technology now exists to characterize in a fairly realistic way the distribution of diseased tissue and non-diseased tissue in each individual. And as we move away from studying paroxysmal AF, which is, of course, a huge problem, but it is still a lot more treatable than persistent AF, which involves episodes that last a week nonstop or longer. But now that we're reaching the point where we can take an individual patient, take an MRI scan, and reconstruct a three-dimensional model that incorporates a realistic representation of the spatial distribution of those different tissue types, diseased and non-diseased tissue, we need to have access to more and more detailed and granular models in order for us to use those models, those patient-specific organ scale models, both to better understand the underlying mechanisms of disease, and then also we hope someday to use those models as clinical procedure planning tools so that we can say in each individual in a personalized way, this is the best pattern of, for example, ablation lesions to place in order to completely abrogate the capacity of the fibrotic substrate to sustain these AF perpetuating mechanisms.
Well, thank you, Patrick, very much. This is a great conclusion to our brief podcast. Indeed, I think the future is bright in the field of computer modeling of all at all scales, from single cell to whole organ, and being even more bold to a patient-specific model, which has been pioneered by Trajanova Group, and Patrick Boyle is one of the big participants in this effort. So at this point, I would like to thank Thomas Hunt, the principal author on a new paper which just appeared on AGP Heart, and Patrick Boyle, expert in computer modeling of atrial fibrillation. Thank you.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.